So, we are speaking about a phenomenon which is quite known, especially in leading positions in the society. People who are very much involved in the theme of self-esteem, and they are occupied with them. And about 1% of the population, or a bit less than 1%, show the fully fledged picture of narcissistic disorder. But many more people have some traits of narcissism, and every one of us has to do with the same theme as narcissists have to deal with. And so I want to try to show you the whole range from the normal development until the psychopathology and the suffering of narcissistic disorder. The term narcissism comes from the Greek mythology. Narcissus was the son of the river god Cephisos and the nymph Lyriope, whom and Cephisos seduced and then violated the nymph. This is also something which leads us directly into the realm of narcissism. There is seduction and there is some violence. And in narcissist parents were worried about the beauty, the extraordinary beauty of the child. This is also something we will see, that even in modern psychotherapy it is described that this is one of the causes which lead to narcissism. There is something extraordinary, some elements which are striking, which are special, the extraordinary beauty of this child. And they were worried and asked the prophet Tiresias about the future of this child. And Tiresias told them that the boy would grow old only if he didn't get to know himself. So, not knowing himself provides him a long life, but knowing himself doesn't help him to survive. He will die early, as soon as he starts to know himself. When he comes closer to himself, this is a deadly experience. But being distant to oneself allows him a long life. Very interesting, this myth. When Narcissus was 16, he was walking in the woods, and nymph Echo saw him and fell madly in love with him, something which happened with several other people, but Echo was very madly in love with him. And she started following him, and Narcissus asked who is there, because he heard that somebody is following him, and asked who is there, and Echo responded, who is there? It is the echo. He speaks and gets back the echo of himself. How terrible. He has no access to the otherness. And that went on for some time until Echo decided to show herself. And she tried to embrace the boy, who stepped away from Echo, telling her to leave him alone. This is typical narcissism. The closeness is unbearable for them. Echo was left heartbroken and spent the rest of her life in glens until nothing but an echo sound remained of her. In the Greek version, this is the Roman version written by Ovid. In the Greek version, written down by Conon, it was not a woman, it was of course a man, a young man who fell in love with Narcissus. Arminius was his name. But the same happened to him. Narcissus rejected him and sent him a sword with which he committed suicide, but only after asking the gods for vengeance. Nemesis, the goddess of revenge, heard the story and decided to punish Narcissus. Narcissus, and the punishment was that Narcissus, with his extraordinary beauty, looked into a pond and has seen his image. And what happened to him? The same as happened to everybody who has seen him. He fell madly in love with his image. And he was attracted by this beauty. And he became sick of this beauty. And he tried to come closer to this image, to this beautiful image. And then suddenly, or by the time he figured out that his love could not be reciprocated, and then he killed himself. Not reciprocated love. The flower that bears his name sprang up where he died and out of the blood which fell into the earth. So this is the myth behind, or the myth which gave the name to this disorder, and this myth describes in a very antique way a lot of psychology, which we are going to explain now more in detail. I already said that the narcissistic disorder, the narcissistic pain, the narcissistic structure is very much in occupied with has an over-concern even with issues of self-esteem. The narcissist has a special feeling. He feels he has exaggerated feelings of self-importance. This is a central term. I am important. I'm a significant person. And this self-importance is something which he just feels, and he is convinced and he is pervaded by this feeling. It is not something which he deduces from some activities or successes or achievements. No, he feels simply that he is extraordinary important. He has no other feeling for himself than to be important. If we ask him, why do you feel so important? He said, it is so. It is natural. That's the truth. That's the reality. How can't you see that? So this is like a distortion of the real self-image. It is a constructed self-image out of a psychodynamic, which we have to see more in detail later, which gives him the constant impression of being extraordinary, grandiose, superb, full of splendor. He hates what is normal, he hates the ordinary. Only the extravagant, the special, is good enough for him. And he has the constant feeling that I am somebody, somebody of importance. This makes him, of course, hardly accessible. It is a feeling which has the same characteristic as the feeling of a paranoid person. This is like a paranoia of self-esteem. And you know, in paranoia, you cannot discuss with paranoid person. They are so totally convinced about their opinions and their visions of the situations and the world and what people do with him or her. So it is the same with the narcissist. You cannot discuss his self-esteem, his feeling of self-importance. And out of this feeling of self-importance is derived a sense of entitlement. Of course, when I am a VIP person, then I am entitled. Entitlement means that I don't have to stand in line as everybody, as normal, ordinary people, because a president doesn't have to stand in line. Of course he is invited to go ahead of everybody. And he shows, these narcissistic persons show a grandiosity in their beliefs and behavior. Nothing is normal. Everything is superb. It's just the best. It is the extravagant. And then, of course, when you feel that way, it is just natural that other people see it. And who doesn't see it, those who don't see it, they are just stupid. They do not match the quality, the hate, you know. He is convinced, or she is convinced, about their extraordinary beauty, power, success, grandiosity of being. And so they have a strong need of admiration, which is just the logic consequence. They even search for compliments, and they have the feeling to have a right for admiration. And to be involved or entangled in such kind of constant feelings and needs and desires, they are of course occupied with themselves, like Narcissus was occupied with the beauty of the picture of himself. He could not stop looking at himself anymore, and he wanted to embrace it, and by embracing this picture he destroyed the surface of the water and destroyed the picture, and he realized this picture of himself has no reality. It is just a reflection, but it is lacking the truth. So in this bulb of feelings and attraction by himself, herself, they have a total lack of empathy. They do not see other people. They cannot feel into other people. So we have in the center, we have this feeling, constant feeling of self-importance. As a consequence of self-importance is the sense of entitlement, the feeling of the showing himself or herself in a grandiosity, in beliefs, in behavior, and to attract admiration with no real contact to the feelings of others. Echo had to die. The Ammonias had to die. They are not reached by the narcissist. And along with this come two sorts of basic impairments. In existential analysis, we describe the human being, the ego, as taking part of two worlds, the outer world and the inner world. And the ego is the overlapping structure of the two worlds. We are at the same time connected with the outer world and with the inner world. When I'm speaking now, I'm addressing you, I'm concentrating on you, but at the same time, I'm always listening a bit into myself. And I get a feeling and then an inner echo of what I'm doing. I have a resonance. So I have I'm connected with the inner world, and out of this I'm changing my voice, I'm speaking faster or slower, etc., because I'm somehow talking to me while I'm talking to you. So we are always in two worlds, and both worlds are consequently disturbed, impaired. With this central obsessive feeling of self-importance, I am not really relating to the outer world and not really relating to the inner world. So as a consequence, this is interesting that in DSM-5, this double impairment, exactly this double impairment, was stressed for the first time. And so in the inner world, the personality functioning is impaired. The self-functioning, the identity, there is no real identity. There is an exaggerated relation to other people, to the outer world. They cannot relate to themselves. They do not know and feel who they are. They take the picture of themselves from the outer world, how others admire him or her. And they have no constant self-direction, no orientation. They cannot set goals and follow them constantly. They need the approval of others. And they set exaggerated standards for themselves. But also in the interpersonal, in the outer world, in the interpersonal functioning, you have a similar impairment. Not knowing who I am and not having clear directions for myself, always depending from others, they look to the outer world. But the interpersonal functioning is impaired because they cannot feel with the other. They have no empathy. They cannot perceive the needs of others and their feelings. They react to others only when it is important for themselves. They abuse the others for their own profit. And there is no intimacy, no personal connection in the relationships. The relationships are superficial. They serve the self-esteem, the self-value. There is no real interest for the other. The relationship with others is dominated by the need for personal gain. So, with this central quasi-paranoid feeling of the self-importance, a whole bunch of consequences are related, which make the life difficult for themselves and also for the people who live with them. They, as such, I give you some more symptoms. Personality traits of this disorder. They live in fantasies of immense success, of immense power, brilliance, beauty. Whatever they do, they are convinced nobody can do it in a similar way. They are outstanding in whatever they do. Even if seen from the outside, it may not even be good or adequate. But their subjective feeling for what they do is that it is extremely good. And if somebody starts to criticize it, they say, this is a mediocre, ordinary person who doesn't see and can't see and understand the quality of what I do, because it is so rare, so outstanding, that normal people are not able to catch it. But you cannot discuss it with them because they are so convinced. And this makes it difficult to live with such people and to work with them. And their being special is so that they, it's very logic for them. They feel their grandiosity. And they say, well, the small cannot encompass, grasp the big. So small people cannot catch and grasp the grandiosity of what I represent. They, in the relationships, they are trying to take advantage of the relationships. They narcissists are always abusive. They enter a relationship but never for the other, always for themselves, because they need the other. Without the other they are nothing. And they often are envious of other people and or believe or think that others are envious to them. They like others being envious for them because this shows them that they are something special, that they are, they have the better deal. And they are envious to others when they feel that somebody gets something what he feels to be entitled to, have this success, this applause, this money, this career, etc. And they cannot stand if somebody else gets that what they do not have. They cannot, they compete everybody, they become rival when they see that somebody comes up into their head. They must be on the top. So, to sum it up, the self-importance, the central theme, is mainly nurtured by three elements. They use objects, and even other people are objects for them. The second, they see themselves as special, outstanding. And the third, they use devaluations to support their outstanding self-esteem or self-value. We can ask ourselves on this point, what does it mean to me to be important? Am I important? For the narcissist, it is very central to be important and to experience this importance constantly. But what do we, as human beings who are not narcissistic, what do we experience when we are, do we want to be important? Are we sometimes important? And to whom and why? Of course, in a loving relationship, we want to be important for the beloved person. In a parental relationship, we are important for the children. There are many situations in our professional life. It's also important to have the position and to experience some importance. So it is something we all need and we all experience. It's not a question of being narcissistic. It's a question of being human, being living a personal life. What do I feel when I am important? We need it to experience that I am somebody. It is somehow structuring our ego, our self-image. It gives me a place. It gives me a weight, a value. It gives me a natural authority to have some importance. And also when I feel to be important for somebody, this gives me some access to the other person. But importance is tricky, because importance is more the aspect of a role, and it is not so much relational. It is not relationship. It is a special kind of connection. Importance has more to do with the dimension of being oneself, of finding the ego, and has less to do with the emotional connection with other people. So we see that the central theme of the narcissist produces a kind of connection which is not relational in itself. And we all know it. And we all have this part in our lives also. But normally, this being of importance to children, to partner, to friends, etc., this part of connection is underlined by an emotional relationship to which the narcissist is not able, he has not this access, and tries to compensate this lack of emotionality, of empathy, of sympathy, of feeling for the other and feeling for himself or herself, tries to compensate it with being more important, but cannot reach this combined package of social relationship. So, let us come to an understanding more through an existential perspective of the existential dynamic here, the anthropological background. There is the center of narcissism is a compensation of a great lack. What is lacking? The ego is lacking. Although he has such a grandiose ego, apparently, in reality, the ego is not really functioning. The ego is lost. There is a deficit. He doesn't know himself. He cannot see himself. He cannot feel himself. And he cannot judge or evaluate or assess or esteem himself. The ego structures which give us the possibility to grasp our inner self, our core, these ego structures are not developed sufficiently or are blocked. There are three elements which form the ego structure. The ego structure are growing, and this is the normal development in the human being. They are growing by getting attention, by getting justice from others, and by getting appreciation from others. And we need the other people, and here is we already see the primary cause of the development of narcissism. When these three elements do not take place, the person cannot develop the ego. So, when we get attention, then we start to see ourselves. When we get justice, then we get a feeling of the value of ourselves and of the importance. And when we get estimation, appreciation, then we develop a self-value out of ourselves. We can develop the capacity to for finding self-value by what we receive from other people. This is something great, which happens over the many years of development, from the early childhood on until the end, let's say the end of puberty. Puberty is still an important period for developing the ego. And this is, there's a deficit or a blockage in the narcissistic personalities. And therefore, they cannot develop an inner presence. They are not really there for themselves. So, they cannot develop according to these three dimensions, the three functions, attention, justice, and appreciation. They cannot develop a real picture of themselves. They do not see themselves. They cannot come to a distance to themselves. They cannot look at themselves. They are blind for themselves. He doesn't know who he is. They cannot develop an identity with themselves. And therefore, but they have the need to develop an identity. It is time for the growing ego to develop identities, but they cannot see themselves. And so they see objects. And therefore they identify with objects as a replacement for this lack of access to the inner self. They do not get the right attention, and therefore they cannot see themselves and take objects which replace their inner self. Objects like work, things to possess, partners, profession, everything can serve as an object. If it has some social value, then it is a right object for the replacement. So they can help themselves. This is a solution. This is a narcissistic solution of this painful deficit. They do not get enough justice. They are not taken seriously. So they develop a lack of relation to their own feelings. He cannot do justice to himself or herself. They are not authentic because they do not really know what is their own. So they cannot do justice and see their own, but they have a need to see their own. And what do they take? They take the second central element of which is the source of this feeling of importance. The second element is this feeling of being special compared with others. He is blind for himself. He doesn't see himself. He needs other people to get a slight idea of who is himself. And when he is special, to be special means I am seen, but I am different. And my difference must be of value because I want to do justice to myself. I am somebody, I want to be somebody, and therefore this being special must be special in superiority, not in inferiority. This is, would be the depressive solution, but the narcissistic solution is, as the narcissist appears when he comes into the door, he has the head upright and he has the nose in the heaven and he looks self-convinced, and everybody sees there is somebody who appears. A narcissist never comes this way into the practice. So, the second structure, the second ego structure, not functioning, leads to to a lack of authenticity, of connecting with the real own, and to the replacement by comparing with others and looking what is special. And the third ego structure, which is not working, coming out from the appreciation of others, leads to the experience that he cannot judge himself, because he cannot. When we are appreciated by others, we get also a critical view, and people tell us what they like and what they maybe even admire, and what they find really touching them. This is appreciation. I like that, and it moves me when I see you playing with the children or whatever. Then, when we get such personal feedback, then I get not only a picture of myself, I get an evaluation. This is a judgment of my behavior, and of my behavior behind which it's me. So they do not learn to judge themselves, to come to a position towards themselves. They cannot develop self-value out of themselves. Of course, we first need the others who give us the appreciation. But then we do it by ourselves. But this is not working in the narcissist. So he constantly needs the others to give them appreciation, but much more than appreciation, admiration, the best of appreciation. And to enhance that, to strengthen that experience, they start to devaluate. They become arrogant. Arrogancy is typical narcissistic. This means this is condescend. This is my superiority. This is, well, I don't have to talk with you. You are not good enough for me. This is arrogance. A feeling of superiority which does not allow a dialogue, an exchange. And so they build a wall, a protection wall around themselves, with respectable objects, with things. Their self-value is totally exteriorized. They have no access to the inner self. The ego is not functioning. The ego is like a way to take out from the inner side. It is the instrument to take out from the inner side the value which is represented by me as a person. We all have an inner value. This is blocked. This is not working. The ego is paralyzed, partly paralyzed, but it is working well towards the outer side. And so they create objects, specialities, and devaluation of others to create a substitution of this lack of inner value, of self-value. This is the narcissistic solution of their problem. They make the solution through identifications with objects, with devaluation, and with specialities which they ascribe to themselves. This inner self is also a protection for them. It's not only a substitution, it is a protection, because the center of the ego, there where the ego is not functioning, is very vulnerable. It is in the stage of a 2 or 3 year old child, and they have to protect. They protect with all their energy that nobody comes into this intimate inner center, not even themselves. They don't look at it, but they have a feeling that nobody should really know who is, what is me, what I feel, what is in my center. And so they take the wall of respectable objects that everybody who comes close remains in that wall and cannot pass through. They see the objects, they see the success, they make them occupy with the representations of the ego for not being touched personally, intimately. For the narcissist, it is painful to come close to an intimate being touched. We can ask ourselves in this situation, in this moment, when we speak about the self-value, what can I appreciate for myself, in myself? What do I feel to be good? What do I like? Who am I really? And can I appreciate myself? This is a central question of the narcissistic personality. He or she, they have a resolution of this problem by this exteriorization and identification. But the non-narcissistic resolution of this question, which is a human question of every human being, who am I really and can I appreciate myself? Do I feel a value? Then we say, well, there are two sides. There is an inner side and there is an outer side. The inner side, I say, well, I can value just my being, that I am, and my character, my attitudes, my love, my fidelity, my belief, all this, my inner world. This is so valuable for me, and for that I appreciate myself for the way I am living that. This inner vision, picture of himself, herself, is not accessible for the narcissistic. But we also have the outer side. We can appreciate ourselves for the successes we have, for the clothing, for the car, for the villa or the house, or more superficial things, but they also count. I feel very different according to when I wear new beautiful clothes and go out or go for a ceremony. I have a different feeling than when I just come in blue jeans or so. This is, the clothes make the personality somehow. Not totally, but a little bit we know of this. The narcissist knows only this. He has no access to the inner world. So the narcissist develops this great wall, protective wall of objects and specialities and devaluation around him or themselves. And this wall becomes hypertrophic. This wall is called the self. The self is bigger than the ego. The self replaces the ego. The ego is in the midst of this self. This is this inner dialogue, this inner contact, this inner connection with my feelings, with my how I appear to myself. This is very weak, very childish, infantile, not successful. This is not really working well. But instead, the outer world, the self is big, grandiose. And the the question is now for the narcissist, how can he preserve this construct? Because this is, of course, a fragile solution. And he has to work for to maintain this solution. And he works to maintain it, to look for a warranty of his self-esteem, of his value, of the way how he appears to other people and how he sees himself reflected by the admiration of other people. What is the warranty for such a wall of objects? There is a warranty when you are the best. It's obvious. When I'm the best, nobody can critique me. I'm superior to everybody. I'm not graspable. I cannot be reached. And being the best means, of course, to be a rival to everyone who wants to come up and to match with me. He must destroy that other person, because if another person pretends to be better than me, or at least as good as I am, this destroys my warranty. This brings me into danger. This is a terrible fight of protection, of this small replacement of ego, which they do. And there is a warranty of self-value, because the objects make the self-value graspable. Then I see who I am. With a Porsche, it's clear that I am of value. And it's visible and everybody sees it, and there is no doubt. So the objects have also play a very important role, this exteriorization, because behind the objects they can hide themselves and are not graspable, not attackable. But the use of the object makes them constantly abusive, because abusive is not so much a danger with objects. We can use a car as abusively for the self-esteem, okay. But if we use children or partners for this as objects for the self-esteem, then this is devaluating, hurting, offending the other people. And then this makes the narcissistic quite destructive in relationships. He fights with all his energy for this warranty, and this makes him respectless. This makes him egoistic. Because he has to fight for this warranty, he cannot allow himself to be empathic. He cannot do it anyway, but if he would be able to be empathic, if he does that, this weakens himself or herself. He must fight. And this is not just a fight of being a little bit better than other people or so. It is not a fight for luxury. It's a fight for survival. And this is typical for personality disorders. These fights are vital fights. Because if he loses the warranty, then he is in danger to be destroyed, that the ego is dissolving. This replacement of ego which he developed, which is the narcissistic solution of this central lack of not having ego structures who can take advantage from the inner life. All is turned towards the outside. And if he loses that, he has no ego. And how is a life without being me, without having a feeling that it's me who lives it? This is something very painful. And so the the wall of objects and the fight for them, for the warranty, is really full of vitality, and it is a vital danger if this is not guaranteed. And there are, of course, anxieties. There are anxieties because the inner pole is lacking in their self, in their experience of themselves. They have the anxiety that they can lose the feeling for themselves. They can lose the ego. That if somebody is not giving the admiration, the danger is already there. They are constantly in danger because they feel the frailty of this construction, and they feel this inner emptiness and void. They can fall into this abyss. And if there is a little bit of critique or not getting the admiration, not getting that feed of admiration, then they are alert. And the second fear is that they fear that they lose the admiration, and when they lose the admiration from the others, they also cannot admire themselves. So the fear ultimately is the fear to get lost when he or she is not embedded in a unconditioning admiration. When they get admiration, they live in the heaven. This is such a relief for them, because they are not in danger. They can live a little bit of ego life and have a better feeling of who they are. They are in a paradisiac, Elysian unity with themselves. It's a heavenly feeling. They are addicted to this relation to themselves. When they get admiration, appraisal, then life is totally good. And they are addicted to this feeling of heaven. They experience almost a symbiotic dissolution with themselves. Then they have a kind of feeling of being close to themselves. Something what we normally can experience, we feel sometimes more, sometimes less, but normally every day we have situations, at least when we go to sleep, where we come closer to ourselves and get connected with our feelings, and we resonate with ourselves and feel that it's me, I'm there, and I'm fine, or I'm sad, or whatever is, but I'm in relation with my. But they do not have this experience except when they get the admiration, and when they are praised and get what they need. They live in this bulb, but they have to fight for it. And they live in a way an exclusivity for themselves, with themselves. They don't let anybody come close to them. They live exclusively themselves when they get the feed from the outside. The anxiety is, of course, to lose this heavenly feeling, to be dethronized, to fall from the throne, and to fall out of the heaven. This is a feeling as if one loses the relation to a goddess or to a god. And so he lives in a constant seduction of himself, herself, in this inner symbiotic unity with a picture of himself or herself. Because they have this imagination, they have the picture in the outside. And when they come close, the same thing happens as Narcissus experienced when he tried to kiss his picture. It disappears. So they must keep in distance these objects somehow. And this distance is passed over by the admiration. The admiration reaches him and produces this heavenly feeling of unity with themselves. Unity with their picture. The what? Let us see now some more detailed elements of the inner world, the phenomenology of how the narcissist experiences his life and what he is doing and why he is doing. So we gave now first the diagnostic picture with this central term of self-importance, this entitlement and all the consequences. Then we describe the psychological or also existential lack in the narcissistic picture, this ego which is not functioning because there is a lack in the development of the three structures of the ego, which leads to these replacements and to this big wall of objects and superiorities and devaluation. Because the inner world is blind, they don't see themselves, they don't feel themselves, they cannot judge themselves. Combined with constant anxiety, there is always underneath anxiety, and therefore they are tensed. They look so superior, they appear so, but they have a hard life because they have to guarantee their picture. Now let us see how they function from the inside. What do they do to survive, to keep themselves alive? What are the characteristic behaviors? First of all, they are constantly occupied with creating a respectable self-image. They work on them. They want to appear well, to be the best, to look nicely, to produce the right image.
Code white, acute 2, emergency bird level 1.
Yeah.
Code white, acute 2.
Sorry, this isn't for us. We are not so important. Yeah, the thinking always circulates around how do I appear? What do other people think of me? Do I appear cool? Do I appear superior? I don't want that they think badly about me and they start to be manipulative. This is always present. A dominating attention. They want to make themselves inassailable. This is so present that they even abuse themselves. Like in the following joke, a British joke. In Great Britain, there was an East Indian living in the neighborhood of a British family. And the East Indian wanted to be as good as the East, as the British people. And the in the English family enlarged the car, bought a bigger car. The East Indian did the same. The English people made a journey around the world. The East Indian did the same. The English people finally built a big swimming pool in the garden. The East Indian didn't have that much money, so he couldn't compete with that, but he made a narcissistic solution. He said, well, in contrast to the English people, I have an English neighbor, but he has only an East Indian neighbor. So, narcissists make use of, in their need for always being the best, they can even abuse themselves or their psychopathology. When they are sick, when they have a psychic disorder, this disorder does not devaluate them, but it is a special disorder, a disorder which nobody has and which only the best specialists have to deal with. But even they are not able, and they change the best specialist with the other best specialist, because they are all not capable to resolve their problem because it is so special. And so they also abuse themselves constantly. It is, their thinking is circulating only about to appear in the best way. Constant occupation with the self-image is one way of their, or one central element in their inner lives. A second element is they create distance because they want to be untouchable and unreachable. We already spoke about this wall of object in which he is hiding the ego, this weak ego. So they hide themselves behind the objects, and when somebody comes close, he is disturbed. If somebody comes and looks into his or her eyes and says, I love you so much, and looks as we do in a loving relationship, he is irritated, or they are irritated, they do not understand, they cannot believe what is going on then. They ask themselves, what does he or she want from me? And he gets paranoid thoughts and feelings. And it's even worse, he cannot imagine what the other wants from him, because he has no symmetric, similar inner counterpart to what is brought to them. So, he can only think that the other wants to abuse him or her, because this is the way how he or she thinks. So it is a danger when somebody comes so close. They feel helpless, and they are absolutely attentive, because they are now going to do what they normally do. They abuse me. And they hide themselves. They cover, dissimulate. They always leave open a back door, a way out, or give answers who are not the whole truth. When they say something which goes into the direction, but say only half of the things. For instance, one patient told me that he has great difficulties with his wife, because he was in holidays in Mexico, and his wife, since he comes back, is really irritated and shouting to him, And I said, oh, why? I really don't understand. And he said, I also don't understand why. And I said, yeah, how long have you been there? Yeah, 2 weeks. And I asked, why didn't you go with her on the holidays? And then slowly it turned out that he was with his girlfriend there. But he didn't. We spoke 20 minutes about the issue, and I didn't understand. And so he is hiding himself. You know, this is the way. They do not say what they feel. If they feel criticized or if they feel addressed, they do not refer to being addressed. They know it, but they hide themselves and say, why are you bothering me? You know, they give back something or in an aggressive way, so that the other doesn't see that he understood or she understood quite well. Their motivation is the inner world of their motivation is that they always have agreed for advantages, for benefits. They have an intolerance of loss. They cannot bear not to gain from any situation, or even to lose or to pay for something and not to get more than what they paid for. This can have extreme and even funny, lead to funny situations when somebody, a narcissist for instance, is on ski holidays and has a ski pass for the lifts, and there is snowing and mist, and so the narcissists go to skiing because they paid for it and they cannot bear it to just do wellness the whole day while they have a paid ski pass. And they even do harm to themselves, but for getting something, for not losing. This is a pervasive element in them. And their attention is focused only on themselves, that they are blind for the values and the world and for the others. This makes them so egoistic. The healthy person is open to oneself and to the other, but their motivation is only turning around their benefits, their advantages, to bring through the own intention, the own idea, the own imagination, what is important for them, the own expectation. The dynamic, they have an inner dynamic, another element, a part of the motivation. The inner dynamic shows them, lets them appear with a defeating drive of freedom. They have a suppressing will. Everybody must do what they want. And they are suppressing and powerful in that. The narcissist becomes unsupportable when people do not do what they want. And he becomes respectless. He can even become aggressive or fight and makes reproaches. But it often starts differently. They come into a team and say, okay, he's inviting, we will do this together. And this sounds very nice, and everybody says, oh good, yeah, he or she is so open and really wants to do it together. This motto becomes visible and is felt only a bit later. He wants to do everything together, but only that way how he or she thinks. This is suppressing will, this drive of freedom. He wants to be so free that he feels squeezed in when he has to do something what other people want. It must always be what they want. Otherwise it's unbearable for them. And they can simply not support it. It's not a bad character. It's a disorder. It's important that we notice that this is not something decided by this person. They cannot decide differently. They can learn over years in therapy, etc., to change it and to be more open. But there is a real deficit. They are incapable to do it differently. And this makes it so difficult, because we normally think, well, he or she is so egoistic and she could do differently. But she cannot. They, in their dynamic, want to remain hidden. They live, they stay hidden. They have not much communication. They don't speak about themselves. They don't want that others enmesh into their intentions or ideas. They want to do it alone. They do everything alone, because alone they are totally free. When they have to be respectful to somebody else, this is a loss of freedom, unbearable. The main thing is that he or she comes to get their goal. And they are, in this dynamic, they are of course big rivals. They must do the things alone, because nobody can do it that well as they do. Everyone who would be a partner or in a team, this would lead to a diminution of the outcome, of the success, because the other people do not have that quality, that capacity as they have. And they are convinced about it. So narcissists are never people for a team. Only when the team is following what they want. Then, of course, they are good bosses of such a team. And, of course, the result is only their own result. The contribution of the others is always minimal compared to their achievement in what they do. And they are known in their dynamic of their tenacity, their impertinent constancy. When they want something, they do not give up. This makes them very effective and strong. Even children with narcissistic traits, when they want an ice cream, they will get it, be sure. And when they get it, think about it, that this is maybe a narcissistic trait. When they are so impertinent and do not stop, so that it goes on the nerves. We cannot bear it anymore. And the adults, it's the same. This goes so far in their tenacity that it can lead to a insensible killing of other people, killing of their esteem, of their public esteem, or killing of their self-value. They are totally cold in this. Another element is that in the inner world they suffer or they experience an inner void. I said experience. They don't experience it because they have narcissistic solutions for this inner void. They escape the inner void. They use mainly three substitutions which cover the inner void. The first is when they feel inner void, they become envious. They develop envy. Envy is a symptom of a lack of self-value. and they do not have real self-value, and they do not admit themselves their lack of self-value, and they are the second form to avoid this inner emptiness, is they are dissatisfied, constantly dissatisfied. Some people tell it even directly in therapy after a certain time, that they feel constant, they all, I have, for instance, a patient was saying, I have constantly the feeling of dissatisfaction within me, and I don't know why. Because this man had everything, but was constantly dissatisfied. He has everything, but not himself. And this is a correct feeling. This feeling shows them that something important is lacking. And when they are not at home, they can easily feel, especially children, homesickness. Homesickness is a symptom of a lack of inner coziness. They are not at home in themselves, so they need the home which is known for them, which is safe for them, which is warm, which is cozy, which is filled with their objects. Then they have some feeling of being at home. And the reaction to this inner void and emptiness with these symptoms of envy, of dissatisfaction, and of homesickness, they develop reactions, and the main reaction is addiction. They are prone to addiction because they are dissatisfied. They have an underlying feeling of emptiness, of something lacking, and therefore they need replacement. And addiction is a good way to get to get some feelings. Addiction of gambling, sex addiction is very common, and of course drugs, alcohol, designer drugs, and one addiction is also very common in narcissists, they are workaholics. Because workaholics gives them the chance to be on the top, and everybody sees it. And they can compare themselves, and they are effective, and they are clever, and they have their competences. But this way how they work is a trial to overcome their inner emptiness. And finally, a few words on the relationship. Their relationships are coined by in the incapacity of loving. They cannot love. It may look like love, and they may buy the nicest presents and be very helpful and functional, but it's not real love. Because for real love, we need to have access to our inner self. And this is empty. There is nothing. They are very poor. They would like to love, but they cannot. Love for them is to see themselves in their grandiosity, to experience their superiority with the other. Out of this and of this self-centeredness comes that the attractiveness of the partner diminishes after a year or two. When they get married, it's typical that after 2 years they don't feel the partner attractive anymore, because the partner doesn't give that fresh feed which they need. This is very painful. They also suffer from this, but they find their solution. Other objects. They're in love. For instance, a narcissistic father says to her daughter, to his daughter, "I love you because I continue to live in you." As this daughter was, it was the daughter who was in therapy. She was destroyed because this was just one sentence of many similar sentences of this attitude which she experienced over years. This is so egoistic. He loves himself in the daughter. He abuses her. And he even tells her. And he devaluates her. The sexuality is satisfying when they can experience that the partner comes to the climax by themselves, because they are so good. They want to experience themselves in the other. They, in general, they like to have a calm pole in their life. They are not the people who divorce so quickly. They keep their relationship. They own their relationship. They need it in a certain distance and continue their life apart. Well, what is the origin of this pathology? If we describe the origin from the outer side, from the experience with the world, what makes people so narcissistic, or makes them develop narcissistic traits towards the solution of their life? They experience inappropriate esteem or a lack of empathy. This is a general basis. They are not encountered. And they have, in general, they are not encountered by the essence of other people, by the person who really sees them and talks to them and empathizes. They have a lack of this. They have functional families, sometimes good and rich families and best citizens of a city or of a town. They have all the materialistic play tools, but not their parents, not their persons. They are often in special roles. They are the preferred son or daughter. They have often special attitudes. Narcissus was extremely beautiful. Something similar is often the case in narcissistic personalities, that they are very nice, beautiful, cute. They have special gifts. Intellectual, verbal gifts in arts or sports, which makes them special. And they are selected by their parents to be their hope carrier, who will realize what they couldn't realize. They couldn't become, couldn't study medicine, for instance, but their son or daughter has to do it now for them. It is also a kind of replacement. And it is also some abusive behavior. This makes people very narcissistic. These special roles and these hope carriers, special attributes, and they suffer or they experience that they sometimes are laughed at, put to ridicule, or that they are spoiled and pampered, and live in families in which the pain is not admitted, is excluded, is a taboo. There are painful family situations with infidelity of the parents and so on, and the suffering, but it is a taboo. Nobody may speak about it, but the children feel it. And this pain is neglected, is overrun, is overruled. This also contributes to this not truthful, this lack of truth in the relationships, in the families. In the center is an experience of seduction. The narcissist experience a constant seduction, what they cannot stop, what they cannot resist. Seduction by the objects, by these representations of the ego, which provide or which promise so much esteem that they are addicted to this seduction of the objects. Seduction means that I am torn away from my way. This is not what I really want when I'm seduced. But I also want it. But not really. We have this bias in seduction. We lose the inner pole in seduction. And this is what happens constantly in the narcissist. The inner connection becomes atrophic. And they cannot let it be. They cannot distance to this constant seduction because it's so attractive. Why is it so attractive? Because they want to be seen. All is seducing them, which promises them to be seen in their value, which gives them value. They have such a big need because they are nothing without it. And therefore they cannot resist, and the ego is not strong enough to develop a resistance. So, to sum it up, in the center of the development is the lack of real human encounter, of real personal dialogue, of empathizing, that parents, the environment, the people around them, really sees them, looks at them, takes them seriously, and talks with them. And this estrangement, this alienation by the seduction. They experience by the seduction that it turns around me, but not really. This turning around me is leading me away from my inner self. And there is a third element, there is a hereditary component, a biological component. There are people, there are families with where you can see that the narcissist trait goes through several generations. This is also a basis for the development. So, we come to the end with some reflection on how to deal with the narcissist personality, and some few remarks on the therapy. Therapy is, of course, a bigger work, which is not the theme of this evening, but some few remarks. How can we deal with them and come to a good living together? It needs primarily an attitude in which we take seriously this personality. When we know that they need the admiration, we must give it to them. Not admiration, maybe, but the feeling of respect and the attitude of we let you be how you are. I don't want to change you. You are narcissistic and you must be narcissistic. I cannot be your therapist. If we cannot accept that, we cannot be with them. But if we can accept them, we can live nicely together. They are not bad persons. They are sick in something. And if I touch the wound, then of course they react heavily, strongly. But if we respect their wounds and do not touch them, but give them the feeling that for sure I will not touch your wound, then they are peaceful. They do not have to protect them, and they do not have to fight for them, for their construction of the ego. So this means when we do not want to change them, this is of course not always so easy as it is said here from me, because they are manipulative. They force us to give admiration. We already gave so much, and again, and the closer you are with this collaborator, friend, member of a family or partner, so the more difficult it can become. But some people are very well based in themselves and can say, well, I know you are so, but I love you. And I can love, we can love a narcissistic personality. This is possible. We do not get back the love, but we can see this person behind. And when we are in that way respecting their disorder, their need, and give them a little bit of that feed, then they are peaceful. And we can live together quite nicely. And this, of course, means also that we let them do the things by themselves. This is very important in therapy. The therapist should not try to do therapy with them. The therapist must go into the attitude of assistance. You will treat yourself by yourself, because the only one who can treat yourself is yourself. No other can compete with you. You are the top. Nobody can understand you that well as you do. We can give you some ideas what you can do by speaking generally about. We can say, well, I don't know how I could help you, because this is really special what you present. But in general, you know, in psychology, there is a description what people do or what one can do, and I don't know if this is helpful for you, but I'm just telling you. So, by the way. And he is very attentive to this, what is said, by the way, when he is sure and ensured that I do not want to change him, I do not want to treat him, I am not superior, I am very humble, I know nothing corresponding to this, but I know that some people spoke about this or they did it that way. And the next session, or in a couple of weeks, he comes back and says, and did exactly what was described. But he did it. He invented it by himself. He did it by himself. And he doesn't know why he doesn't need a therapist at all. Because he is the best therapist. And despite of being there, he did it by himself. He had the idea. He forgot it. Or he cannot admit it. I don't even know if he forgot it. Maybe he has some memory. But he must be the best. And if I can live with that as a therapist, I can do good work with them. But it's difficult for the therapist to be nothing, to be engaged, to know that we have a heavy disorder which needs all our strength and power. And at the end, we did nothing, and he did everything. This is a good treatment for therapists. So, in therapy, we have special elements which we apply. Just to name them, we work with straight facts. We give straight explanations, very not personal, not saying that it's from me, but just information. in a maximum neutrality. We then start to confront themselves by asking them, what do you gain when you are so arrogant? What is the benefit which you have? Because if they always want to have a benefit, we take them with their own need and connect it with another type or strain of behavior, this arrogance. And then they slowly start to become a bit a more differentiated picture of themselves, a self-image. We introduce the outer perspective. We start after a while, after half a year or so, we start to speak about how this behavior is for other people, how other people react. They bring sometimes conflicts which they have, and we take the conflict to understand why there is such a conflict. And so we again connect or bring them into an encounter with themselves. Then we need, of course, the deeper work, because underneath there is this pain of not having been adequately seen and estimated and encountered and get the empathy. And this is very painful. They can even become suicidal when we come close to this central scene and pain. And then we also train them to see the value of conflicts, and that in conflict they can find better themselves and start the inner dialogue. When they develop an inner dialogue, they are gone through, they are done. And in the central is that they live with the attitude, everything may be as it is. Because up to then, as long as they are narcissistic, everything must be as they want it to be. But when they become so relaxed, when they get into contact with themselves and into a dialogue with themselves, then they can finally start or correct themselves, because the impulse may remain, but they learn to correct themselves, that everything may be as it is. This is also a good sentence to close the presentation, that everything is as it is, and it may be as it is, and then where we do not agree, we start to change it, to work on it. But we begin with this attitude, everything may be as it is for the moment, and then we will see. Thank you for being so attentive.
Thank you very much, Alfried. It's also a good, perhaps, sentence to end or to start some questions, if things may be as they are, or perhaps you have some questions about maybe they should be differently than they were presented here. So a few questions here. First of all, one in the very back. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you very much for your presentation. A couple questions. The initial symbolism in the mythology that the narcissist can't, they find themselves, they die. And yet, to me, the introspection is probably by not the narcissist. So I'm just not quite sure of that metaphor. They will die if they find themselves. And secondly, I have a question about the self-worth. Is that the issue with narcissism? I'm thinking about somebody that would be with a narcissist or stay with a narcissist. There must be some question about their own sense of self-worth and that kind of thing, be as it is. But I think there's got to be some ingredient there of one's own sense of self-worth, the attraction. Like, what is the attraction? The narcissist or some combination that, you know, comes to look after me and says, I'm not. smart enough to look after myself, I will default to that authority, to that narcissism. Two questions, thank you.
Yeah, the second question, it refers to how can somebody fall into love with a narcissist, if I understood correctly. Yeah.
How can you be with
somebody? How can you be, yeah, but first fall in love and then be with a narcissist. The narcissist is also a human being, has also a person. It's only the ego which builds the bridge between this inner intimate self towards the world, towards the outer. This is not really functioning. The bridge is somehow too narrow or even broken, or sometimes broken. This is the reason. And the narcissist can be very nice, very charming, very amiable and lovely, and when he is in his heaven or her heaven, then there's no real problem. And for a long time it can work well when there is no tension coming up, no criticism. When they get their feet, no problem. And this is lovable. But of course, when the narcissist is devaluating the environment, and this makes people suffering in their closeness, when they're close to them. They are devaluating because they need it, but if I have a good self-value, and if I have the knowledge that he or she needs it, and from time to time it comes, then I say, okay, I know, now you are working to rebuild yourself, and maybe I wasn't clever enough to prevent it. So it is also partly my mistake for not having prevented it. But for some people it's unbearable. Say, if you do not have this kind of, let's say, a bit phlegmatic temperament, that you say, okay, but I know who I am, so let him speak or her this. And then if you do not have that, you cannot live together in the long run.
Real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a great idea when Stephen King, when I found out this by accident, just like you read it. And I said, why don't politicians talk about this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why don't you hear from leaders, world leaders, why don't they talk about it? Like, about these people.
Yeah, politicians. Politicians are. Yeah, the politicians are elected by people. What do people need who elect such politicians? This is a big question. There are always narcissistic personalities, especially in leading positions. Be it in universities, in churches, in military, in the army, or in politics, everywhere. And in the leading positions, there is in general 3 or 4 times as much narcissistic personalities than in general population. But you know, when narcissistic people have great advantages, say represent something. America first, but I am America. This is so narcissistic. If you refer to this North American issue, I am America, and therefore America is first. And the whole country becomes more narcissistic.
And it's 50 years ago I wanted to take the course.
Yeah. Yes. Well, maybe just one or two other questions first. We had one there and then one here. Yes. You. Yes.
Hi there. In a family dynamic, what is a healthy way to have boundaries with a narcissist when they're going through their suffering period? What's a way to build a healthy relationship during the trauma?
That's a very good question, very important question. It is very healthy to remain myself and to refer to myself and to speak out of myself. This is difficult when we are not trained, when we are not experienced in this, to really encounter and to take serious, and not to ridicule them, not to fight them, but to, especially when you have this knowledge that there is a big pain in them and a big incapacity to respect them and to try to be as honest as I can be, to be as authentic, related to myself, and not to let me manipulate and draw myself away from myself. This is the best, healthiest way, and this is also helpful for them. Over the years, this gives them something. It has some equivalent of a therapy, although it's not a therapy, but it gives them what they really need. They need encounters. They lack this encounter. They didn't have it. They suffer from it, and they get it late, but a little bit. And this is helpful for both sides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. My question is about basically how a terminal or very traumatic diagnosis like a Parkinson's or a cancer would affect somebody's narcissistic diagnosis. So basically, what would a confrontation with mortality do to a narcissist?
Yeah, this is a great challenge for them. Either they make something special out of it, they write a book on it or so, or they demonstrate it or speak openly about it and take advantage out of it, as long as they are still narcissistic. Yeah? Or if they lose, for instance, and this happens sometimes, if they lose a high position, sometimes they are fired, or a politician is losing that his or her position, or the enterprise goes bankrupt or so, then they are in a high danger of suicide. How to continue when this represents my ego, when this is my identification? They are destroyed. And then they do it by themselves.
Anna?
How much hope is there for narcissistic personalities? And in your experience, have you seen real change in these people?
Yeah, this is also a good question. A profound treatment lasts years. Minimum 5 to 7 years. And most narcissists are not ready to undergo such a long treatment. Most narcissists are happy when they get treated in the symptoms with which they come. They have heart irregularities or asthmoid psychosomatic disorders or so, or have some conflicts in the working place or cannot integrate or digest a career step which they didn't get and become so furious and that they bring themselves into danger in their enterprise where they work and so on. They have some specific conflicts, and that's the reason why they come. And when these conflicts are resolved, about 70% of the narcissists, in my experience, stop treatment because they are served. And they also have the feeling that it is a long-lasting procedure to go further. And many of them are in quite stable relationships and economic situation, and they are happy enough with that. But some go further, and it can go, really, can come to this treatment of the central pain, which is really painful, really demanding for them. But then they have a different quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Question over here, yeah.
So I imagine that that somebody who suffers from narcissistic personality disorder doesn't come to see a therapist because they are saying, I think I'm a narcissist. So do they come for a certain other symptom?
Yeah.
And at what point,
that's true.
What would you say, what makes you say to yourself, oh, I think this person isn't here because of a heart irregularity or a work conflict. I think that there is a bigger issue. And how do you identify that? At what point? What, is there something specific or...
Yeah.
A slow process of uncovering?
You are right. People come not because they are narcissists. They are come because either the partner sends them more, or they have these problems as I described before. And then it is the skill of the therapist to treat the problem and at the same time as much as possible of the narcissistic traits. And sometimes people become an insight and see that there is much more than the heart disease or the psychosomatic disorder. And they are interested to do some more because I could explain, or we can explain the narcissist, that some other problems which are not that dominant are related to his way of behaving and feeling and thinking. And if we could treat them at the same time, not only symptom-oriented, but in a side way, we treat the symptom, but at the same time we try to combine it with other difficulties they have, then they are sometimes interested to do more.
And if they're not interested, is there really no hope?
They live their life, they do not die. It is more the other people who suffer than themselves. And if the other people arrange with the situation, they can live quite nicely their life with their pain. It is really a problem that the motivation for therapy in narcissistic personality disorders is low. It's in borderline personalities, which are the brother or sisters to the narcissist, it's much higher because they suffer more. But the narcissists are so gifted to arrange themselves. And they exploit the environment. And the environment either can protect themselves or they separate. He can, then of course, narcissists can become very lonely. And they are lonely, even in the relationship, even in the family. They are lonely. They have this wall of objects which behind them, they are totally lonely. But they want to be lonely, because it's too painful not to be lonely. So they do their life. And it is a solution to get along with this difficult life history and maybe even hereditary tendency. So there is hope for a life which is also a mastery of a big problem, a big pain. But the environment must be attentive. And it's in a partner relationship, there is not, at the beginning there can be a lot of romanticism, but after a couple of years it becomes very sober in that relationship. But if the partner is skilled, then the relationship can go on. But the partner certainly needs other relationships, friends, or the love to the art, or to a musician, to music, or so, to overcome, because he doesn't get back enough. The partner invests a lot and remains quite alone. But when, and many partners have this capacity to find values in relationships in a good sense, in a good way, and then it is also nicely to live with them. It is, there is always a bit of pain. The partner feels the pain of the narcissistic personality disorder, more that the narcissist doesn't feel it, but the partner feels it. But when I feel related and feel some love, it's also my task and my duty, my will, my wish to live with that human being. No relationship is perfect. Almost no. There are few, but...
Very good. Perhaps one more question, and then if you would like, you there's always opportunity for conversation afterwards. Perhaps the last question here.
Me?
Yes.
I have a question about, you mentioned earlier that one of the things, narcissists, one of the traits is that they want to really reach what they want, like really want to get what they want. And then I was thinking of, like, you know, we're living in a culture that is very self-oriented in terms of it's encouraged to reach your goals and mm-hmm. everybody know what they want and, you know, get what they want. So how far is it narcissistic to say, okay, I know myself and I know this is what I want and I want to follow that? Would it encourage narcissism in society?
No, live that way. Not narcissistic is if you know what you want, or if we know what we want and do what we want and follow that, respecting the other, empathizing the other.
That's the difference.
That's the difference. The narcissist is blind in that. He must follow his will, which is not a real will, which is a construction out of his image, of his needs, of his psychodynamic, or their psychodynamic. And but if we are open, it's good to have a strong will and to be responsible and to be empathic. And then this is a good life, a decided life. Yeah, which brings creative achievements and inner fulfillment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.